This is Deanna Spingola. It is Thursday, November 8th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just education and information. It is Bare Bones Broadcasting. My guest today is John F. Kimberling, and he is going to give us a post-election perspective and analysis of the impact of third parties. Welcome to the program. May I call you John?
Yes, although my nickname from my friends is Jack.
Jack, okay, great.
I answer to either.
All righty. So, you know, there was quite a large turnout. In fact, the numbers are quite startling when you think that, about 100 million people came out to vote?
Yes, I believe it was a record.
I find that myself, I find that kind of suspicious, because when you consider the population of the country and that a lot of people really don't even vote, and when you consider that a lot of the population is composed of children and people who are not eligible to vote, I find that 100 million turnout is a little bit interesting.
Well, I have no reason to be suspicious of it, but I agree it is a startling number. I personally think it probably is attributable to a very effective get-out-the-vote program by both parties. Obama, of course, became famous in 2008 for the way he motivated and excited a large new group of people, young people, minorities who had not voted before, and then put in place a very effective local organization around the country to get out the vote. And on the Republican side, a lot of money was spent by these super PACs to create an organization for Romney, who also had a good organization. So it may be just the result of effective getting your supporters out to the polls.
I thought, you know, they kind of have done this just about every year. I know when I've worked on various campaigns, oh my goodness, we would do just about every, you know, we'd bake cookies and pass them out at the railroad station and do just all kinds of things just to try and get people out to vote, to participate. And yet I know that a number of people really don't participate in the voting, and for good reason. I mean, when you have two individuals that you're just not really happy about, when they both seem to be serving the same interest, you kind of wonder why even bother.
Well, I think that's true. And recent history has shown that participation is getting less and less. And polls show that people are dissatisfied with the candidates, and they're dissatisfied with what they stand for. And they feel their vote doesn't make a difference, so they don't go. This time, that lesser of two evils may have been a big way of voting. Democrats who were disappointed in Obama and thought he hadn't been progressive enough or enough of a fighter didn't like Romney even more than they were disappointed in Obama. So they got out to vote. And on the Republican side, on the Romney side, I think you've seen a very almost vicious dislike of Obama. And a lot of it is racial. A lot of it's racist. And that creeps out every so often in things like John Sununu made a very racist comment recently. And the hatred, the idea of a black man in the White House, and all this talk about his being a Muslim and a socialist and everything, it makes people really dislike him. And even though there may have been not a total comfort with Romney, the right-wingers were suspicious of him because they're afraid he's a moderate, and the moderates don't like his catering to the right-wingers, but they still disliked Obama more. So it may have been a vote for the guy you disliked the
least. Right. Oh, and now you've talked about third parties, and third parties have never really been viable. They've never really been successful, and usually when you have a third party, it means that somebody is going to lose, and they bring in a third party just to make that happen, just to give it to the guy that they want to actually put in. And this happened back in when 1912 with the Bull
Teddy
Moose
Roosevelt.
Party, right?
Teddy Roosevelt was kind of unique. I think he just was still ambitious, and he'd only served much less than two full terms, and he still wanted to do things, and he didn't like Charles Evans Hughes, so he went out there with the Bull Moose Party. But that was strictly a Roosevelt party in a Roosevelt election. In 1992, you had Ross Perot and the Reform Party. He simply made a speech one day on a talk radio show about how the country's headed in the wrong direction. We need to do, and people got so excited because they didn't think either Clinton or George Bush had it that they rallied, they supported him, they signed petitions, they got him on the ballot, they gave him money. And even though he was a pretty poor candidate, he said some silly things near the end, and his campaign almost wound down, but he still got almost 20% of the vote. So, but historically, the third party in this country, we've always had two parties, the third party has been sort of an issue party. There have been times in the history of the country when there was an issue that became an overriding public popular issue, and neither of the two parties would endorse it, so the third party came up with it in support of it. That was the case with women's suffrage, with slavery, with the public vote for U.S. senator, for civil service. Those were all issues the third party adopted. They got a big vote. One of the other two parties saw that the people wanted that side of the issue, so they adopted the issue in their own platform, and then the third party had no reason, so it went out of existence. I think today, I've written a book about third parties. I think we need a third party today, not for that reason, not for a one-issue party. But I think people are dissatisfied with both the Republican and Democratic parties. Polls show that an increasing number of people don't register there, they register as independents. And I think we need a new party to adopt new policies, pragmatic policies that solve problems we have instead of being all ideological, that you can't touch Social Security and Medicare, or we're never ever going to raise taxes one penny. These rigid positions on the right and left don't solve the problems, and the people know it.
Oh, I totally agree. I still have my Ross Perot button.
Wonderful. Well, people like you, if we could get people like you organized and signing petitions to get a new third party on the ballot. And my idea would be to start out with all these existing splinter third parties today, the Green Party, Reform, Justice, Constitution, Libertarian. Get the leaders of those parties together and say, look, you are so small now, you're on the fringe, you don't have any real effect. If you want to be effective, let's get together, let's have a meeting, a convention. And let's try to see what areas of common interest we have. And they do have a lot of common areas of interest. And see if we can't get a platform and get some candidates and make a big viable third party. But a lot of these issues, these parties all agree on. They all want a smaller military. They don't want to be the world's policeman. They are against an imperialistic country that spends so much of its money on the military. So there are a lot of issues. They all want drug reform, tax reform. There are a lot of common areas.
Right, but what they do lack is that they lack the attention of the media, And certainly there were some good third-party candidates this time, but the media totally ignored them. They weren't involved at all in either of the conventions, the Democrat convention or the Republican convention, which I think is almost saying, okay, there's a monopoly here on politics in this country. You either have to be on the right or you have to be on the left, and so they're just kind of squeezed out deliberately.
That's right. The media does that because they like a battle. They like the battle between the two big boys. Also, it is difficult for the third party because the big moneyed interests, the special interests in this country, are very happy with the Republicans and Democrats. In 2000 when he ran for president in the primary against George Bush, he said, the big multinational corporations are more powerful than the government itself. They own the government. And the military-industrial complex that makes money out of the military and having a big military, the tax structure that both the Republicans and Democrats have in place favors those big offshore national corporations. They are very happy with the status quo. They don't want it changed. So there's no effort made.
I agree with you, absolutely. And of course, many of those companies donate to both the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. And so how do you break that kind of a hold on the government?
I think you can break it only if you can get these third parties united on an agreed platform or agenda. Then I think you have to have a figure of national stature, someone who has name recognition, someone who could legitimately be president and step forward as leader. And there are some people like that. Then you do need the cooperation of the media or the internet or the social media or someone to say, hey, let's change things here, people.
I think that we had that back in 2008 with Ron Paul, and it didn't do any good because right at the last minute, he sort of backed out.
Well, Ron Paul, his ideas of non-military intervention are very very popular in this country. His idea of a smaller government is popular, but some of his ideas strike people as unworkable, for example, to abolish the Federal Reserve System. Well, that would be a tremendous blow to our financial system and would cause a lot of problems. But he still, if he can compromise and change some of his views, that's what happened in the old days. You had Republicans and Democrats who had strong views and strong views differences within each party, but they sat down, they worked together, they ate meals together, they drank together after hours. They liked each other, and they worked to make things work. They compromised, and that's what's needed. You need a pragmatic problem solver, someone like Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York, someone who says, I'm not far left, I'm not far right, I am a problem solver.
Mm-hmm.
And then if that could get support, it would help.
Uh-huh. But you didn't think that Ron Paul's thoughts or views on the Federal Reserve were popular? I mean, there's a lot of people in this country who feel that the Federal Reserve has done a lot of damage. And, of course, you have the usury that every human being in the country pays on the currency that the Fed produces. And it's really not a constitutional agency. So I totally agree with Ron Paul's views on the Federal Reserve.
Well, I don't know what would replace it. How would you have any monetary policy to give help in times of inflation or deflation? You have to have something there. You have to replace it with something, and I don't know what that I haven't heard anything yet that's been proposed.
Well, how about what's in the Constitution?
A national bank?
Well, that's what the Constitution would have us do, and have it regulated by the government instead of some guy that the president appoints.
Well, I
who
don't know.
Usually
that
is
that would wreak havoc with our banking institutions. You see, the Constitution does a lot of good things. The Bill of Rights is the most important part of the Constitution to me because it gives us our rights and says these rights shall not be taken away, although they have been to a great extent now with this so-called war on terrorism. But there are a lot of things in the Constitution that are out of date. For example, the Constitution says the United States senators shall be elected by the state legislatures, not elected by the people. Slavery was in effect permitted under the Constitution.
Well, but the 14th Amendment, alleviated that issue. And as
no,
far
I'm
as
talking about, I'm talking about the original Constitution.
Oh, okay.
It was meant to be general and not rigid, and you can't be too rigid about it. But be that as it may, this idea of the Federal Reserve is simply an issue that can be discussed and compromised on. Now, one interesting thing about the election is, if you look at these, some of these about five or six states, Ohio, Florida, New Hampshire, and so on, Romney lost by a bigger vote than Ron Paul got in the Republican primaries. Now, if you think about that a minute, you have to say, wait a minute, did those people vote in the election for Romney? If they did, well, it still wasn't enough. But if those people were disenchanted with Romney because he didn't stand for the things that Ron Paul did, and those people all sat home on their hands, or a large number of them, that was a margin of loss by Romney. But we'll never know that for sure, of course.
Right. And, of course, then you also have all of the stories that are coming out of Ohio about busloads of Somalis who could not even speak English coming in to vote for Obama by the busload. And these people were not capable of speaking English, but had been instructed to vote for Obama. And
well, I just talked to one of the poll watchers for Obama, and she said that's not true. She said they did a very good job, the Republican poll watchers in Ohio. They both Republicans and Democrats had poll watchers on every, almost every precinct, and they watched very closely for people who weren't eligible to vote. And maybe a few slipped through, but not many. There was a problem in Pennsylvania, you know, also, where a number of people at the machine said, I cast a vote for Obama, but it can't cast. I pushed my finger on Obama, but it came up Romney. And they even have a video recording of one of those instances. So the machines were rigged or defective. Now, how many there were, we don't know. Were there just those three that they have proof of, or were there more? So that sort of thing happens in every election. You remember in the Kennedy-Nixon election how it was claimed that Lyndon Johnson sent in a bushel of votes from Texas to help Kennedy carry Texas. So there's always that kind of talk. In the old days, the Tammany machine in New York used to give people a pint of whiskey and a dollar or whatever it was to vote. That's usually true. And we probably do need better election laws. In Florida, people had to stand in line for hours to vote. Well, that's not necessary. Those things should be corrected.
Right.
But I think the election came out about the way it was logically meant to be. It was close. The country's closely divided. Better organization. What I don't know what made it. People were happy with Obama, the way he handled Sandy. they were unhappy with
How did he handle Sandy?
What?
How did he handle Sandy?
Well, by being prompt. You remember Bush didn't even do anything for several days in Katrina, but Obama was on the ball at once, got FEMA down there, got emergency help. And Chris Christie, a Republican governor of New Jersey, who was out campaigning for Romney, went out of his way to say how thankful he was for Obama and the great job he'd done. I think that helped, too, the last minute.
Yeah, that was kind of strange. A lot of people are pretty mad at him for doing that.
A lot of people what?
Are kind of upset with Chris Christie for doing that because they feel like he kind of changed sides or you know,
those
something.
They're upset with him because he wasn't political. Those people think you should be political. If you're a Republican, you should always hate Democrats. If you're a Democrat, you should hate all Republicans. But Chris Christie, I give him more credit than that. He said, if you think I'm doing anything for politics, you're crazy. I love my state, and I want to do what's best.
Well,
a lot of people admire him.
There are a lot of communities that are saying, people from various communities are saying that the FEMA help is only going to the communities where the media is present because they're doing it for media attention. And there are communities there that have received absolutely no help whatsoever.
I can't comment on that. I don't know anything about that.
Well, getting back to the election and to the machines, I personally believe that we should not be using computers that can be easily hacked. I think that it should be back to the paper ballots, and I think you need to show an ID.
I agree. And it's always been suspicious that the computer voting machines are owned by a company, by a man and family who are notoriously right-wing Republicans. We should go back to paper ballots.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Right. Right. They can easily be hacked, and as you said, they are owned by people who have an interest. And I remember getting back to Florida too. I believe it was a 2004 election. Maybe it's a 2000. Get my elections mixed up, but. Bush's brother, Jeb Bush, actually disenfranchised 57,000 voters from the rolls.
That's right.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris, who was the Secretary of State. That was the 2000 Gore-Bush election.
Right.
No question about it. It did not come out right.
And they never address that situation. They never address the issue.
No, they don't. And there are a lot of these things that should be corrected.
And yet they're not. So I'm not sure how we could go about doing that because once something is installed, such as voting machines, they rarely ever uninstall such things.
Well, yes, and it depends upon who's in power. You have most of these things are up to the states, and if you have a state that's Republican, like Florida was in 2000, they're going to want a political finish to it.
Are you there? Did I lose you?
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. You went blank there. Okay, it's up to the states. Yes, it is. The states are in charge of running the election. And what are your feelings about the citizenship issue? I know it's been a big issue with Obama, where you had a couple of lawyers who were producing evidence that he wasn't actually a citizen, that he was born in Kenya. What is your view? What are your views on that?
Well. There's a birth certificate issued in Honolulu saying he was born there. And there are affidavits in support of it. And I don't understand why anyone would question that.
Well,
He's
because
born
he
in
was...
Honolulu and he has a legitimate birth certificate. It's one of
Well,
those things. It's like the big lie that Goebbels talked about. If you tell a big lie so outrageous
that wasn't
with
actually
nothing to
Goebbels.
support it, people will believe it eventually.
That wasn't actually Goebbels. That was written in Mein Kampf, and Hitler wrote it in Mein Kampf. But he was referring to another group of people. He was not referring to something that the Germans had implemented.
No, I'm saying that was simply the theory. And it's a theory today. If you tell a big lie over and over, people say, well, it must be true. They wouldn't lie about that. And people believe it. There's no evidence. There's absolutely zero evidence that Obama was born any place but in Honolulu.
Okay. So do you think that that the movie that was produced, well, there was actually two movies that were produced in the last 3 or 4 months, 6 months. One of them was produced by Joel Gilbert, and it was entitled Dreams of My Real Father. And then there was another movie produced by Dinesh D'Souza. What was the name of that one? Can't think of the name. But they were to denigrate Obama.
They were what?
They were designed to denigrate Obama.
Yes.
Now, you said that you thought that he had been doing a good job. Well, what about the economic situation and the budget?
He's been doing a good job.
But what about the economic situation?
I didn't say Obama had been doing a good job.
Oh, okay.
No, I think he did as good a job as he could in the circumstances. He came in time where the financial system was crashing and business was bad, unemployment was growing, and he had a lot to deal with. I'm not sure he dealt with it as well as he could have, but he had a lot of opposition. You remember the Republican leader of the Senate said, when he was asked what the Republican goals would be, he said, our one goal is to see that Obama's a one-term president.
Okay, that's John Boehner.
Obama had a lot of opposition that prevented him. The jobs bill he introduced last year, they put money in education and research. It was stopped by the Republicans. He had a lot of opposition. I think he did about as well as he could have with the opposition he had.
But what about
And you must remember about the economy. Our economy is growing faster than all of Europe now. We are doing better than Europe. What?
How is that? I mean,
we have a higher growth rate of gross national product than all of the countries in Europe, the ones that are having austerity programs. Their growth rate is lower than ours last year in 2011.
Okay, but when you consider the total production, and when you consider the reduction in production in this country since NAFTA was passed by both Bush and Clinton, then you have to kind of question our economic growth when you have all of this production being outsourced and so much labor being insourced.
Yeah, NAFTA didn't do it. It was their tax system. We have a tax system where if you move your factory offshore to another country and produce your product there and make a profit off of it, you don't have to pay any income tax.
Right,
and
but NAFTA...
Both the Republicans and Democrats favor that.
Right, but it was because of NAFTA that they were able to do this.
No, this was done way before NAFTA. This law has been in effect for about 15 years. NAFTA really has nothing to do with that. NAFTA has nothing to do with where you pay taxes. In this country, a business pays taxes if it produces a product and sells it here in the United States. It has to pay income tax. If it moves it overseas, it does not have to pay taxes on the profit.
Okay, so then you have if that is the case, then you have the Democrats and the Republicans both caving in to the multinational corporations. I mean,
that's
those
right. And that's why we need a new third party.
And how would the third party remedy that?
Well, as I said, I think we need to get the leaders together, unify them into one big third party, get a nationally known leader who is a moderate problem solver, and then take the case of the people via the internet or the media or however it can be done.
But how would that solve that problem of getting production back to this country?
All right. One of the platforms would be that we change the tax laws and say, if you make a product overseas, if you send your factory overseas, you must pay profits on every penny you make. If, however, you'll bring that factory back here, or if you'll start a new business in this country, we will give you a 10% tax credit for 10 years to motivate you to do the work here.
Okay, but if we had a third party and they came in, you still have 535 people sitting in Congress who financially benefit because of their association with multinational corporations.
That's why you need a new third party, and you need congressmen who belong to that third party who are not Republicans or Democrats.
Oh. Do you think that's going to happen?
I think it could happen. I think it'll be difficult to do, but I think unless things improve, we're going to come to that. People need to be motivated. They need to be organized. They need to work hard to make it happen. It will happen. It's hard. It's hard to get on the ballot. The Republicans and Democrats keep everybody else off the ballot.
Sure. That is so true. That is so very true. I was going to ask you something. I can't think of what it was I was going to ask you. Getting back to the Constitution and the popular election of senators, which was the 17th Amendment, wherein they were not elected by their state legislature. And it used to be that senators went to Washington because the state legislature sent them to Washington to work in behalf of the state. But now they are elected by popular vote, which then leaves them vulnerable to the multinational corporations who give them money or give them campaign funds, which allows them to be bought, which allows them to accept bribery to vote in favor or for the benefit of the corporations rather than the residents that they're supposed to be serving.
Now, what are you proposing?
Well, I think that that we should repeal. Of course, that probably is never going to happen. But repealing of the 17th Amendment would certainly help. But you have senators who are profiting by their association with multinational corporations, and as long as they are receiving money, they're not going to vote against themselves. I mean, people go to Washington basically to get rich.
Well, they all get rich. That's why I'm saying we need a new third party, and we need a third party congressmen and senators. If the senators were still picked by the legislature, it'd be even easier to buy them. It's easier to buy 40 legislators in California than it is to buy 10 million voters. I think you and I are saying the same thing. We need a change. We need a change where these companies are not controlled and by the companies, the big corporations. Big corporations are lining their pockets.
Indeed.
That's why they give so much money to candidates. They give them to whichever he will control. Now, when the Democrats were in power in the House, both in Congress and the president, they got a majority of contributions from corporations, maybe 60-40%. Now they give the money to the Republicans because they think they'll apply more pressure. We need to get money out of politics. In my book, you'll notice I propose that we abolish all campaign contributions over $100, and we force the media, television, radio, to give equal time to the two candidates to present their case, not ads, but to present themselves. Take the money out of politics, and you'll solve a big problem.
Sure. And two, I kind of equate this with Baskin Robbins, the ice cream shop. You can go in and you can pick from 31 different flavors. But in politics, you have two choices. And when both of those choices are bad, then you're not going to feel like you're being represented. And this is
That's why we need a third party.
Well, I agree with you. But it's how do we go about getting a third party when the people who are making the laws are the ones that are making these kinds of decisions?
Well, I present a proposal for how it can be done in my book, in the final chapter of my book, What This Country Needs. It can be done. It's difficult, but if you get the people awake enough and alert enough and unhappy enough that they'll work for it, it can be done.
Okay. So do you think we're close to that?
I don't think we're close to it yet, no.
Well, what do you think it's going to take?
I think it'll take more gridlock, more polarization in Washington. It'll take more inequality where the very small 1% at the top has huge, huge incomes. And people are living in poverty at the bottom, and then the middle class is not moving. It'll take more discomfort, more problems, till people get to the breaking point.
Well, the media doesn't cover the many, many problems that are existing already. When you look at so many people who are still living in tent cities, who are living under the viaduct in Las Vegas on the Strip, when you look at people who've lost their homes, how much more are they going to accept before they raise up and just demand that things be different?
I don't know. I agree with you. I should think there'd be enough unhappiness now. And there may be. That's why I'm trying to get these leaders of these parties to meet so we can all sit down and talk about this.
Right. Now, have you approached the leaders of these various parties?
I'm talking to one of them Saturday, the first one. And I hope to contact each one of them after that.
Well, I had Merlin Miller on my program a couple of times, and he is just an excellent gentleman, but he was only on the ballot in a couple of states. He had some wonderful ideas. He was approached to be a candidate by the party that he represented, and we didn't hear anything about him, and it's a shame that we don't hear more about who else is running, and the way that the candidates really just shove everyone else out, and of course that's a function of the media. And the other thing that is so disturbing, and I was so glad that the elections were over because I was really getting very tired of the candidates bashing each other's characteristics and making claims of and they might have been, true, but making claims about each other's character and behavior. And they didn't even address the issues, the real issues that people are concerned about, the economy. There's things like smart meters. There's Agenda 21. There are all of these issues.
That's because the campaign managers, the PR people have told them that people don't care. It'll be more effective if you attack the other guy.
Wow.
They do it because it works.
Well, it does. It works because for the majority of the people, they go by what the campaign ads say. They don't really look at the issues, and they show up at the polls just swayed by emotion rather than by ration, and they make their choices based on their emotions. And that's probably why we are in the dumbed-down situation that we're in, where we elect people who really don't serve our interests.
I think you're right.
Well, I hope that you are right, and I hope that a third party will emerge that will save this country from the multinational corporations and the destruction that they are doing it. And certainly these multinational corporations have absolutely no concern about what they are doing to the environment, either in this country or in any other country. Go ahead.
It's just greed. They want the money.
They want the money. Business people look at the earth and they say, how can I make money off of this? Whereas an environmentalist will look at the earth and say, how can I save the earth and preserve it and maintain it?
Right.
It's just the way that people look at things. Well, as I mentioned, I hope that you're right, and I hope that a third party will emerge, and I will certainly be a part of that if and when that happens. So thank you so much for joining
me
today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.